An arch is stretched over the words mainline releasing. Dorian Incorporated presents a GenieWorks production. Mockingbird Don't Sing. A naked toddler is sitting in a chair in the middle of a dingy room. A bucket has been placed under the chair. The filthy child is strapped to the chair around its waist. A large wooden playpen sits in front of the toddler. Melissa Errico, Joe Regalbuto, Sean Young. The child is older. She is strapped to the chair by her hands, her feet, and by her waist. Chicken wire has been secured to the top of the playpen with a padlock. The room is dark and dirty. The child frowns and looks around. There are dark circles around her eyes, and dried food is stuck to her face. Michael Lerner, Kim Darby, Tara Steele. Light shines through newspapers which have been taped over the windows of the child's dingy room. Some of the papers have yellowed and are torn. The child is even older and remains restrained in the chair. She's wearing a very short, worn dress, and her hair is matted and dirty. This story is based on actual events. Los Angeles, November 1970. A filthy hand touches a photograph in a magazine. The picture of a woman in a bathing suit has been scratched out everywhere except the model's face. The hand gently runs over the woman's picture. The page is turned where more models' pictures have been scratched over by an ink pen. The child, still strapped to the chair, is looking through the magazine. She looks up as someone enters the room. A gray-haired man with a mustache enters with a tray. The girl flinches as he throws the magazine down and begins spoon-feeding her. Food dribbles out of the girl's mouth.
Don't you go. Not after you swallow that, do you hear me?
She swallows and takes another bite.
Ah!
She flinches and stares at him. He starts feeding her faster than she can take it. He rubs the food all over her face.
You stop that!
A teenager's reading as a dark-haired woman listens and clutches her cane.
Cancer, June 21, July 20. Now is the time for change.
That makes you happy now! There! Push it all in there! How does that make you feel, huh?
Little tasks you have been putting off can now be...
That make you happy? Is that what you want?
All the little tasks you have been putting off can now be moved to the front burner.
It's nighttime at the house. As someone plays the piano, the girl lies awake in the playpen dressed in a large shirt. Her legs are covered with bruises. Her arms are crossed over her chest and chained to the bed. Her face is still covered with the smeared food. She's staring at the ceiling. In another room, the gray-haired man is cleaning bullets and lining them up on a towel. He uses another cloth to wipe off a black revolver. The teenager who was reading is asleep on the floor. The dark-haired woman is near the gray-haired man on a sofa. Her lip has been cut and is in the process of healing.
Wes?
Wes pulls the gun's trigger near his ear and leans back in his chair.
You promised me. Remember?
He gives her a sidelong glare.
If If she lived past the age of 12, we could get her some help.
Wes slowly aims the gun at the woman and pulls the trigger. She flinches. The next morning, the gray-haired man glances back as he goes to his car. He backs the old car out and leaves. The dark-haired woman uses her cane to poke the teenager who's still asleep on the floor.
Billy, get up.
Damn it! What did you do that for?
Later, he opens the girl's cage, releases her restraints, and lifts her out.
She's gonna kill me, you know that, right? I'm as good as dead.
You just have to tell him you don't know where we're at. You woke up when we were both gone.
Oh, yeah, and how are you supposed to have gotten away, huh? You can't even do anything for yourself.
I don't know, you'll have to think of an excuse.
What are you gonna live on?
He wraps the shirt around the girl as the woman puts on her coat. Later, the woman is wearing dark sunglasses and using her cane as she slowly walks down a hallway. The girl is clinging tightly to the woman's arm. The girl cowers behind her as she feels her way around. They approach a woman at a counter who answers the phone.
Department of Welfare. I'm going to have to call you back.
The woman stands.
Is this where you handle the blind?
Oh, no, ma'am. This is social services. Now, if you just go around back where you came...
Could you lead me there, then? I've got cataracts, and the woman told me on the telephone I could come down here and get some benefits.
Who's that with you?
That's Katie, my daughter.
How old are you, Katie?
She'll be 14 in April.
The woman grimaces as Katie cowers behind her mother. Soon, mugshots are taken of Katie's mom. She winces each time the flashbulb goes off. Wes is frowning as his mugshots are taken. Later at night, he's driving his car listening to the radio.
The parents of a 13-year-old girl are free on bail tonight, facing charges in what authorities are calling the worst case of child abuse they've ever seen.
The girl, currently being treated for malnutrition at Children's Hospital, was apparently held captive by her parents from the age of 1 to 13.
Early reports indicate the child never even learned to speak, leading some to tag her a so-called wild child.
Wes stops the car, closes his eyes, and shakes his head. He covers his face with his hands. Later, Katie's mom and her lawyer dodge reporters.
Standen is an innocent victim of her domineering husband. That's the only comment we have to make at this time. Thank you.
But what happened to the little girl? You know what happened to
the comment we can make at this time. Thank you.
Where's your daughter? Where's the little girl?
As Wes's car sits in the driveway, a woman stands in front of the home. Two boys are with their bikes near the house. A man drives up and gets out with a camera in his hand.
Well, where's the house where the people tied that little girl to the toilet?
Wes peeks out from behind a curtain, removes his glasses, and frowns. With disgust, he tosses the curtain back, then begins carefully spreading out a thin plastic sheet on the floor near the small dining room table. With a framed picture of an older woman on a table, Wes kneels and makes sure that the plastic sheeting is stretched across the floor. In the courtroom, Katie's mother listens as her lawyer talks in her ear.
All rise.
Everyone stands as the judge steps to the bench. A sign on the front of the bench reads, Judge L. Ritchie.
Be seated.
The lawyer whispers to his client and they remain standing. At the house, Wes solemnly carries a suit into the room. He stops when he gets to the plastic sheeting and carefully steps around it. He lays the suit on the table next to the framed picture of the older woman, then places a note on top of the clothing. Back in the courtroom, Judge Ritchie looks through a file.
State versus Standon. You're charged with willful gross neglect of a minor placed in your custody. How do you plead?
Facing the table, Wes slowly puts the revolver to the side of his head. The lawyer looks at his client.
Louise.
She startles and the judge looks at them.
I plead not guilty. I'm sorry.
The judge writes down her plea as Louise listens to her lawyer. More people have gathered in front of the house. The man with the camera is talking to another man. Everyone freezes. Blood flows slowly over the plastic sheeting. On the table, the note on the suit reads, "The world will never understand." Dark circles remain around Katie's sunken eyes, but she's been cleaned up.
She's beautiful. I was expecting. I don't know what I was expecting.
Stan claims he's heard her use a few words for colors, and mama and stop it, I've heard her use those myself. We gather she learned them before she was locked away, but so far, she doesn't seem to have picked up any new ones.
Well, she's almost 14, right? So the critical period is past.
I beg your pardon?
Lenneberg's hypothesis, if a child doesn't acquire a language by the time it reaches puberty, it never will.
Well, she hasn't officially crossed that line yet, so even if this theory is correct, then she still has a little time. Now listen, I don't want you to just dive in there and start testing. I want you to spend these next few weeks getting to know her, build up her confidence and trust. Unless, of course, you did like to back out right now.
Katie's with a bearded man.
You like the hair? Katie, what color is that? Katie, do you know the color? Do you know what color that is? Huh? That's red. Your hair's brown. Mine's gray.
Katie, do you remember me? I'm Dr. Glazer. I brought a friend of mine with me today. Her name is Sandra. Sandra.
Sandra crouches down with a smile near Katie. Katie stands, then runs her fingers over Sandra's face. She touches Sandra's cheeks, her forehead, and even her long hair. Sandra stares at her wide-eyed as she continues to examine Sandra's face. Later at night, Sandra approaches a small house. She's carrying books and a purse. Inside the house, a record plays on a stereo. An unshaven man is reading a book.
So did you meet the famous wild child?
She smiles as she nods.
And?
She shakes her head and looks at the floor. Children are getting their lunches in a cafeteria. A woman is behind a counter serving the food. A blonde-haired girl tries to find a place to sit as another girl talks to herself. Katie is stuffing food into her mouth as the bearded man watches with a grimace.
Katie, here, watch me, okay? All right?
She watches as he takes a bite of cracker.
See?
Food is stuck to Katie's chin. Sandra frowns and blows out a breath.
Apparently, she was never given enough time to chew her food, so she waits for it to break down in her mouth.
The woman who was serving food brings a green plastic bowl to Katie.
How are you doing, sugar pie? Got a present for you.
How did you know she wanted that?
She told me.
She did?
Well, she didn't use her words, but she told me just the same.
Later, Sandra watches and takes notes as a woman works with Katie and other children who are holding balloons.
Mom, and how many balloons do you have, Mary?
Four.
What about you, Wesley? How many balloons do you have?
Three.
I think you might want to take another look at those balloons. Is it three or is it actually two?
He has two balloons. Katie gives him the balloon she's holding.
Well, thanks to Katie, It's now definitely three.
She hugs Katie, who smiles.
Very good.
Good.
Sandra frowns, flips through her notebook, then writes something down. Later, Katie's trying to climb up on a jungle gym, but is having problems lifting her leg to climb up. Her teacher tries to help her. Sandra's watching from a distance. The teacher wraps her arms around Katie and helps her down. The teacher's smile fades when she sees Sandra.
Judy!
Hi.
We were never formally introduced. I'm Sandra Tannen.
I know who you are.
They shake hands.
Oh, you know, it's so funny. This hospital has gone to such lengths to secure a grant, and with the money that they've gotten, they could probably bring in Noam Chomsky himself. Instead, they run across town to UCLA and find some first-year graduate student.
Well, that's exactly what they wanted. I don't have any time constraints or family obligations.
No experience? Do you actually think you're qualified to teach this child how to talk?
I'm not here to teach her how to talk. I'm here to document the way she goes about acquiring language. There's a huge difference.
Judy nods.
Well, you're certainly going to have a lot to document. This girl...
She glances back at Katie.
This girl is going to make me famous. I'm going to be the next Annie Sullivan.
Judy walks away. Sandra raises her eyebrows in disbelief. Katie, her mother, Sandra, and the bearded man are in the cafeteria.
Would you like some more coffee, Mrs. Sandin?
Don't know if that would.
Katie?
Milk dribbles down Katie's chin.
Did I tell you your brother moved away? Don't know as I know where exactly. Don't know as he told me.
Could I speak to you for a second?
Sure. Please, would you excuse us for a minute?
Thank you.
Sandra and the bearded man step outside.
So I'm assuming, because nobody told me she was going to be here today, that it's not a very good idea to ask her any questions, huh?
Well, I think that's probably a wise assessment.
But I hope you can appreciate my sense of frustration. I mean, we know so little about Katie's past. This woman is in a position to tell us so much.
The last time she talked, she wound up in jail. Don't forget, the court has decided that she's a victim, too.
Don't you want to know why? I mean, I'm not even talking as a scientist here. I'm talking as a human being. I want to know. I want to know how another human being was subjected to this kind of torture.
Well, you just have to be patient. Eventually, there'll be some answers. There's been a suggestion that the hospital donated services to remove her cataracts. Kind of a...
goodwill gesture.
That's right. I still think it's vital that Katie continue to see her mother. She's the only link to the past that child has got.
Later, Katie, the bearded man, and Sandra enter a grocery store. They smile as Katie looks through the shelves of food. She picks up a bag of noodles, then tosses them aside.
Hey. No, I got it.
He replaces the noodles as Katie picks up a canned good.
What do you got there, Katie?
Green.
Oh.
Green. Yes, that's green. This is green. These are peas.
Hey.
Yeah,
peas.
Yeah.
That's
oh
right.
God.
Peas.
She picks up another can.
And that is corn.
Katie walks over to a man and grabs his clothing.
Katie? Katie?
Hey. Easy.
Katie, come here. There's something else. Katie.
Katie,
there's something I want to show you, Katie.
Sorry.
You have to leave that man alone. He doesn't want to be bothered.
Bothered?
Bothered. Oh, my goodness.
Sandra apologizes to the man and he shrugs. Katie sees meat on display near a butcher. She slowly walks past the rows of roasts. She picks up a package of meat and stares at it. A butcher is using a butcher knife to cut some meat. Katie stares at him. The butcher turns back to see her, and they stare at each other. Thank you. He offers a piece of raw meat to Katie, and after a moment, she takes it. She touches the meat and stares at the butcher, who smiles a little. She sniffs the meat. As she looks at it closely and sniffs it again, Sandra and the bearded man stop talking and watch her. That night, Sandra's washing dishes as her boyfriend dries them.
And we were at the toy store, and Katie was looking at these beach pails, you know? She just loves anything plastic.
Right.
So finally, Stan and I decided we're going to buy her one. And the cashier says to us, "Are you sure she wants another one?" And we said, "Well, what do you mean?" And she says, "Well, that woman who just left just bought her one."
Wow.
No, but that's not what's really interesting. What's really interesting is that Stan and I were with her the whole time, and she never said one word to that woman or to anyone else.
Did you pay the phone bill, by the way?
I mean, I guess it's not that surprising. She's been cut off from language, so naturally she's developed this whole other way of communicating. But it is so fascinating. It's so fascinating to see the effect she has on people.
Right.
Later, Sandra pushes back Katie's hair as she watches her cut pictures out of a magazine. Judy's there.
What are these?
It's
green.
Judy glares at Sandra, then turns to Katie.
And you have eyes, right? Where are your eyes?
Katie points to Judy's eyes.
No, those are Miss Bingham's eyes. Where are your eyes?
Katie thinks for a moment, then points to her own eyes. A dark-haired man is staring at her.
Look at that. It's just like she's blind.
Katie touches Judy's face.
I mean, even the way she walks is a blindism, too. It's like she's testing out the ground beneath her feet because she doesn't even trust her eyes.
Katie looks at her reflection in a one-way mirror. Later, a machine conducts an electroencephalogram that's recorded on a machine. X-rays of Katie's head and neck are lighted up nearby. In a dark room, Katie's strapped down onto a stretcher around her waist. She's wearing a hospital gown and has her eyes closed. Her head is covered with a cap to which sensors are attached. She suddenly awakens and partially sits up. She looks around. The dark-haired man, Sandra, Dr. Glazier, and Stan are in another room.
Now, Antarctica. That's a gold mine for studying the effects of social isolation. Spent 3 whole summers there. In fact, even got a mountain named after me.
I think she's waking up.
Katie frantically looks around.
Look at her. She's scared to death. Can I just go in there for a few minutes?
She'll be back to sleep in no time.
Sandra frowns.
Now, when you isolate somebody, you start to see the effects in as little as 15 minutes. I imagine with what this little girl has been through, we're going to find some pretty severe abnormalities.
Sandra steps away.
Where do you think you're going?
I'm just
going
to go and say hello, just so that she knows I'm close by.
Sandra.
The man leans closer to Dr. Glazier.
Pepsi generation for you.
Stan frowns as he watches Sandra and Katie through a window.
Hi, Katie.
Sandra's trying to take off the sensors.
No, you can't do that. No, I know, it's so uncomfortable. Oh, no.
Katie's trying to get up. Stan lowers his head.
No, sweetie, lie down. No, it's okay. It's okay. How about I sing you a song, huh? How about I sing you a song? Hush, little baby, don't say a word. Come on, Mama's gonna buy you a mockingbird. And if that mockingbird don't sing, Mama's gonna buy you a diamond ring. That's good. If that diamond ring,
Katie calms down and watches Sandra make a face.
Hush, little baby, don't say a word. Mama's gonna buy you a mockingbird. And if that mockingbird don't something, Mama's gonna buy you a dum-dum-dum-ding.
Sensor.
Well, this is very interesting. You see these spindles here?
Mm-hmm.
You see how they're all bunched up together like that?
Mm-hmm.
That's generally a sign of retardation from birth.
Mama's gonna buy you a mockingbird. And if that mockingbird don't sing, Mama's gonna buy you a diamond ring.
Later.
So she said Sandra silly, huh?
Mm-hmm, that's what she said.
Amazing.
It's the first time she's called me by name. Or put two words together, for that matter.
Hmm.
Come here, Katie.
Well, we all know there's been some progress, but that doesn't necessarily mean that Lacey's wrong.
Well, it doesn't mean he's right, either. It's just one study. You know, Lacey admitted himself. You find those exact same sleep spindles in infant boys who've just been circumcised. Hmm. You know, don't forget, Katie started speaking at 16 months, which is not the case with retarded children.
Mm-hmm. Katie, hey, Katie, come here.
Look, I'm not trying to be biased. I mean, I'm prepared to follow the facts wherever they might lead.
Katie sees a dog. She remembers being strapped to the chair as Wes growled at her. Katie tries to hide and starts scratching her arm until it bleeds.
Katie, don't do that!
Please call off your dog.
Katie sits alertly in a hospital bed. Sandra's sitting on the bed. Katie picks up a pail.
Yes, I know. You like pails. Pale. Yes, I know.
Like duck.
Yes, and you like buckets, too, I know. But why is this one a pail and this one a bucket? They look the same to me.
Judy walks up.
Well, making more of our little research notes, I see.
Sandra turns away.
Katie, how would you like to spend the night at my house tonight?
I beg your pardon?
Dr. Glaser said it was fine. This child is not simply some tool of science, you know. It's about time she spent some time at a normal home.
A normal... Judy, do I need to remind you of certain comments you've made?
Katie playfully pulls on Judy's arm.
And Miss Bingham likes Katie, too. Miss Bingham likes Katie more than anybody in the whole world.
At night, Sandra and her boyfriend are asleep. He sits up, glances at the clock, then answers the phone in another room.
Hello. Well, she's still asleep. Sure, I can give her a message.
She steps in as he writes the message down.
No, you're kidding me.
She frowns.
Who is it, Rob?
Katie's been quarantined over at Judy Bingham's house.
Sandra scoffs and shakes her head. Later in Dr. Glaser's office.
Judy's contracted rubella. Katie's been staying over at her house, so she's been exposed too. Now, obviously, there is no way we can risk infecting the rest of the children at the hospital.
I don't believe it. I don't believe this.
Well, I saw her with my own two eyes, and she's definitely got something.
Yeah, she's got something, all right. She's got Katie.
All right. Let's just relax, okay? It's going to be business as usual, only for the next few weeks, it'll all take place at Judy's house.
Sandra cocks her head and stares at him. The sun is shining when Sandra approaches a white house with green trim. She knocks on the door and glances around. She walks around to the front of the house and sees Katie looking through a downstairs window.
Hi, Katie. Could you open the door for me?
Katie waves.
The door. Could you go around and open the door for me? The door. No, sweetie. Hi. Yeah. Could you open the door? Open the door. Sweetie, please, just open the door for me.
Judy suddenly opens the door.
I'm sorry, I was indisposed. Come in.
Sandra steps inside.
Oh, yes, Sandra certainly did wait. So, how you feeling, Judy?
Much better, thanks.
Got door!
Boy, Katie, you are certainly learning a lot of new words.
But store is her favorite. Every building she sees, she stops and points and says, store.
Got door!
If it's all right with Miss Tannen, it's all right with me.
Katie smiles at Sandra.
Now let's go.
They're back at the butcher's. He offers her another piece of raw meat, and she playfully takes it. She makes a face at him, and he smiles. She shakes her head and wrinkles her nose at him, then gently takes the meat and strokes her cheek with it. At night, she's watching TV. She looks at Judy.
You can watch TV for a few more minutes, and then it's time to sleep.
Judy joins Sandra at a kitchen table.
I can't get over how well she's doing. You've really got a gift, Judy.
Well, I guess I can empathize. I was a very sickly child myself, and I always wanted kids of my own, but I guess it was just not meant to be. Anyway,
I suppose you've noticed that Katie is fond of touching herself, haven't you?
Yeah, of course. She's even done it in public a few times.
And you've tried to stop her?
Yeah, of course I have. But, well, you know Katie. She's got a mind of her own.
Yes, but children are sponges and they do what they're taught to do.
Well, not always, you know. I mean, linguistically speaking, the seeds of language are there from birth. And the only way for a child not to develop language is to, well, to do what Katie's parents did. Just isolate her completely.
And you think the sexual instinct works the same way?
Well, it's not really my field of expertise, but even infants masturbate, right?
You want sugar?
Judy takes a sip from a teacup. Later, Stan is frowning in Glazier's office.
Judy Bingham has accused me of molesting Katie. Yeah, I went over there yesterday, you know, just to check things out. And Judy told me that I could take Katie out for a walk. So we get back to the house. Katie's hair's a little mussed, you know, from the wind. Judy looks right at
her. She's out of her mind. She's completely out of her mind.
I can't describe, I can't tell you how I felt. I mean, a charge like that. You know, I mean, if it goes public, I'm the last person in the world who would do anything like that.
Well, who would believe her? I mean, you practically saved Katie. Everyone in this hospital knows that.
Oh.
You treated her like she was your own.
Oh, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. If I win a suit for slander, the charges would still stick. I mean, people would always wonder. I really care about that little girl. But, you know, I don't think I have any choice except to quit the team.
Outside Judy's.
Katie, the door. The door. You know, door? Oh, Katie, please. Not again.
I'll be right back, Katie.
Judy approaches Sandra.
What's going on?
I don't think it's a very good idea for you to see Katie today.
Well, since...
Your visits are tiring her.
Since when? Since when do you decide who she sees and doesn't see? You're not her guardian.
Well, as a matter of fact, I've applied to become just that. And until social services make their decision, she's to remain in my custody.
Judy, don't you realize what you're doing? You're cutting her off from the rest of the world. It's like she is right back in the house she grew up in.
Oh.
Judy glares at her as she goes back into her house.
Well, first Stan York and then me. Who's going to be next, huh? Are you going to go on holding her hostage for the rest of her life?
Judy slams the door. Sandra watches as Judy pulls the curtain in front of Katie's face.
Okay. What's that?
A videotape of Sandra working with Katie is playing.
Like... Yes! Yes! That's it! I didn't even know you knew what a log was.
Sandra's watching.
Okay. How about it?
Dr. Glazier enters.
Am I disturbing anything?
No, not at all. I was just reviewing the same work I was doing over a month ago. It's pretty much all I can do at this point.
You know, Beverly and I have been talking about this whole situation, and, we've pretty much decided to apply as Katie's foster parents.
Oh, Norman. That's the best news I've heard in weeks.
It's not a firm decision yet. I mean, Katie is, you know, obviously she's a handful, and we do have three children of our own.
Of course. Sorry. In my especially my zeal, I hadn't even given that any consideration.
And then I've already taken over as Katie's therapist. I mean, Beverly, with her background in child development, will be a lot of help in that department. But I'm also a researcher on the case, so to try to balance all of that is...
Yeah, I see. I see your dilemma.
But I think it can be done. So if Katie's social workers give us the go-ahead, then we're willing to give it a shot.
Later, Dr. Glazier carries Katie's bags in one hand and holds her hand with the other. They're leaving Judy's house and walking to his car where Beverly is waiting.
Katie?
Judy comes out with a green bowl.
We forgot one.
As Dr. Glazier puts the bags in the trunk, Judy crouches in front of Katie.
I love you.
She glares at Dr. Glazier as he blows out of breath.
I don't know what to say.
Not now you don't. But believe me, this is not over yet. You are depriving this child of the best home she's ever had or ever will have.
and I'm going to make sure you all pay if it's the last thing I ever do.
Dr. Glaser gets into the car as Judy looks at Katie with her arms crossed. Katie waves goodbye, and Judy watches them drive away. Judy frowns and fights back her tears as Katie sticks her head out of the open car window and waves again. Later, Dr. Glaser, his son, and his daughter leave the house. Beverly hugs her son and waves goodbye to her family. From an upstairs balcony, Katie watches them leave. She plays with her bead necklace as she wanders into her room. She glances over her shoulder. She limps over to her bed and sits between a stack of pails and some magazines. She glances at one of the pails that has a shovel attached to its handle. She picks up a National Geographic and sees pictures of men working in deep ice and snow. One man is working in a large hole. She turns the page and sees a picture of dogs pulling a sled across a frozen wilderness. She turns another page and sees a close-up of a dog showing its fangs. She throws the magazine and hits the pails. Beverly looks up.
Katie,
scratching her arms as Beverly runs in.
Katie, what are you doing? Katie, stop that right this second.
She gently tries to restrain her. She slams a pillow down on a bed as Katie watches.
Oh, I am so mad. Boy, I'm so mad. I could just... You see? I'm so mad that I could just throw a complete tantrum. Just... You see me? So mad.
Later.
Harder. Good. Now say, I am mad, Katie. Say, I'm mad.
Katie, mad!
Good.
Sandra watches as Norm videotapes.
I know this is helping, Katie, but... You may live to regret this one day.
Harder, jump up and down. Good. Now say, I am very, very angry.
I am very, very angry.
Katie and Beverly walk toward the house.
You might be right.
Later in therapy.
Car has mirror.
Katie looks at Sandra, who is frowning. Sandra points to words stuck to a flannel board as Dr. Glaser videotapes.
The car has... a mirror.
Glaser's daughter walks in.
Katie, did you take my hairbrush?
Can't this wait till later?
Well, I'm sorry, but she's been appropriating too many of my things, and frankly, my patience is running a little thin.
She storms out. Katie glances at Sandra as Glaser stands. He goes after her.
So, what should we do now?
Why, Sandra, play piano.
Oh, it's concert time, is it? Oh, all right. All right. What do you want to hear me play?
Dr. Glaser listens to his daughter.
I am trying really hard. I really am. But sometimes I don't think you guys realize that I have problems, too.
She starts to cry and hugs her father.
Come on, of course we do.
Sandra plays the piano. Pushes Sandra's hands from the keys. She grabs a book of music and places it in front of Sandra.
Oh, we have a request for Chopin. Okay. Let me find something I know. Okay.
Katie watches her sadly. As Sandra plays, she weaves to the music and her eyes roll back in her head. She remembers being in the room with yellowed newspaper covering the windows. She recalls when she was younger. Her face is bruised, pale, and dirty as she sits sullenly strapped to the chair in the room. Later, Katie's asleep in her bed. She wakes up and pulls a pink hairbrush out from under her pillow. She smiles a little, then rubs the back of the brush gently over her cheeks. Later, Dr. Glazier and Beverly are waiting as a taxi arrives. He pays the driver and helps Katie's mother out of the back seat. Her cataracts are gone.
Yes. So, I believe this is the first time you've ever actually seen me in person, isn't it?
She shrugs.
You're a lot shorter than I thought you'd be. It's so nice to finally meet you, Mrs. Stanton. Louise.
They all go into the house.
Katie, Mama's here.
So, would you like something to drink?
Oh, don't know that I will. Lunch is almost ready. I made something special. I hope you like it.
She is. Here's Katie.
With her usual limp and neatly dressed, Katie slowly walks toward her mother. Sandra's behind her. Louise looks down at Katie's legs, then crouches down to hug her.
Happy, Katie, Mama C.
Louise closes her eyes, then stands.
What have you done to her to make her walk so peculiar?
Louise looks at Sandra. Katie stares open-mouthed at her mom, then turns to Sandra. Louise turns to Dr. Glazier, then stares at Katie. Later, the Glazier family, Katie, Sandra, and Louise are eating dinner. Louise isn't eating.
So, I hear you're from Oklahoma.
I used to be.
You ever seen a tornado?
Once.
I actually did a paper for school on tornadoes, and I found something kind of interesting. They've actually hit Los Angeles a couple of times.
I don't believe that.
What? I mean, think about it. You got warm air coming up from Baja and cold air coming down from the Sierra Nevadas. It's always the interaction of those two fronts that causes the tornado.
Jonathan's got the family aptitude for science.
I beg your pardon.
Katie reaches for something.
Katie.
She turns to Beverly.
What are you supposed to do before you reach for something at the table? You're supposed to ask, right? Now say, may I have the applesauce, please?
Katie looks at Louise.
Come on, Katie.
Then looks at the others.
Come on, you can do that. Don't torture the child. If she doesn't want to say anything, she doesn't have to.
The girl stares at her mother with a slight frown. Later, Louise leads her daughter by the hand, but Katie stops her. Louise stiffly hugs Katie, then gently touches her cheek. She smiles for a moment, then leaves. Katie watches as the door closes behind her. Beverly is pacing outside as Sandra drives up.
Well, it's finally happened.
What's finally happened?
What we've been waiting for.
Soon after, Sandra goes into Katie's room. The girl is holding onto a post at the end of her bed. Her head is resting on the mattress, and she's staring into space.
Hi, Katie.
She sits behind Katie.
Hi. I know Beverly already tried to explain this to you, but you really don't have anything to be afraid of. What happened to you happens to every woman. It happens to me. It happens to Beverly. It just means you're becoming a big girl. That's what it means.
Later, Sandra approaches Dr. Glazier outside on a patio.
I think she'll be all right. God, she just finished toilet training. She's already menstruating.
Well, look, there is a silver lining to all this. The critical period's over. Anything
Katie learns from now on is over the line. So I guess we're going to finally find out if the Lenneberg theory is correct.
It's not a theory. It's a hypothesis. Katie's going to prove it wrong. You just watch.
A teacher stands in front of a class sitting on the floor.
All right, quiet down, people. I have an announcement. We have a new student who's going to be joining us today. Now, she's a little bit older than the rest of you, but she's never been to school before. So I want you all to be especially nice to her. Do I make myself clear?
Yes.
Class, this is Katie Standen. And what do we say to Katie?
Hi, Katie.
Katie smiles.
All right, dear, you can sit down wherever you'd like.
Sit here.
A boy pats the floor. Holding her lunchbox, she slowly walks through the maze of kids and finds a place on the floor. Later, the bus driver smiles as kids board a school bus. The teacher smiles as she helps Katie to the bus. The driver smiles at the children and talks to them as they climb up the bus steps.
Now, Katie, this is Kurt.
The handsome driver smiles.
Now, he's already been told where to drop me off, so don't worry, okay?
She stares adoringly at the blue-eyed man.
Now the sun shines in my life. I'm not standing in the shadows anymore.
That afternoon, the bus arrives at the Glazier home.
I was lonely and out of touch.
It stops, and the driver opens the door.
Katie!
He takes her by the hand as she stares at him. He picks her up and carries her off the bus as Beverly and Sandra watch. He puts her down, but she won't let go of him. Beverly pulls one direction as the driver tries to nicely release her grip on his arms. He waves and gets her lunchbox, but Katie breaks away and grabs him again. Later, Sandra smokes a cigarette in a bubble bath as her boyfriend shaves with a straight razor.
It must have taken 2 whole minutes, but we finally got her loose.
How'd the bus driver take it?
Oh, he was great. He was a really, really nice guy. Did I mention he's gorgeous?
Several times.
Oh, God, I told Katie if I were unattached, I'd go for him in a heartbeat.
Well, you're not.
I'm sorry. Oh, God, you know, I'm with Katie so much, and she could be such a tease. She's got this really playful side that, you'll see one day. She's got this amazing capacity to sort of catch you up in whatever mood she's in.
It's magical. Yep, she's just magic all the way around.
Hey, is something wrong?
It's just ever since you started working with Katie, I've heard so much about her. I mean, that's pretty much all you talk about.
So I'm boring you.
No, but you know, you keep building her up. You keep saying I'm going to meet her one day, so I'm just... I really don't want to be disappointed, you know? I mean, nobody can be that great.
Fine. From now on. My lips are sealed.
At the Glaziers, Sandra's working with Katie at the flannel board as a man and woman observe.
Where is May I Have 10 Cents?
Katie looks at the guests.
Now, does that sound like a question, Katie? A question. Okay, I want you to just try again, and this time I want you to try very hard.
Dr. Glazier enters.
Oh, geez, I am so sorry. I was at the hospital and I heard that...
Norman, this is Eleanor. Sorry, I don't remember.
Schultz.
How do you do?
And this is Dr. Richard Tennyson.
Hello.
We're from the
National Institute of Mental Health. Yes, Beverly called me and told me you were... You know, actually, pardon me, I assumed that we're going to be seeing each other at my office.
Well,
and,
this is the place where most of the work takes place.
Yes,
Katie!
She spits on the floor.
Katie, you know better than that. Beverly doesn't like it when you spit on the floor.
The coal mine
is in the basement. You see, sometimes we appropriate some of Katie's toys as a kind of a disciplinary, Look, why don't I just show you around,
Later, Katie's carefully placing a spoon at the center of each dinner plate on a dining room table. The Glazier's daughter walks in with small plates and napkins.
The spoon goes here, Katie.
Katie watches her move the spoons to the side of the plates. Dr. Glazier is pacing outside as he drinks.
I showed them all the videotape I've shot. For almost an hour, they sit there looking at it, and then all they can say is, so where is your research? Well, I just showed them my damn research. And they start in about how it's not all perfectly cataloged.
Well, that's what they're paying for, isn't it?
Well, of course it is. But you know what? It's not fair for them to just drop by and expect everything
Mom,
to be just perfect.
I think we need you in here.
Wait, here we go again.
Beverly leaves as he takes another drink.
Norm, you don't think we're in any danger of losing the grant, do you?
Oh, of course not. They know how important this is. I just need to clarify my part of the research.
He turns away and shakes his head. Later, Kurt smiles.
Good morning, Katie.
She stares at him adoringly. Dr. Glazier videotapes as Beverly helps her onto the bus. With the lunchbox in her hand, Katie slowly finds her seat on the bus. Sandra watches as the driver closes the door. Sandra puts her arm around Beverly and they pose for Norm's camera. A child rubs a crayon over a drawing. Other children are drawing pictures, including Katie.
What's that? Kurt loves Katie.
He grabs the picture and runs to the teacher. Katie grabs it back, then slaps the boy.
Katie! Why did you do that?
Very, very angry.
At the beach, Louise shields her eyes from the sun and Sandra sits on a blanket next to her. Louise smiles and waves at Katie, who's playing in the sand near the ocean. Katie waves back as she holds a yellow plastic bucket in her other hand.
I never did get out to the beach much. Wes would never take me.
He was a cruel man, wasn't he?
Louise turns away.
Katie said something the other day. She said, and these are her exact words, "Father hit big stick." Do you have any idea what that might mean?
Well, Wes, he didn't like noise. That's why he didn't want children. And Katie, well, sometimes
she'd make noise.
And Wes, he kept a big stick in the corner of her room for when she acted up.
So how often did he beat her?
Not all that much. He had a few other ways of keeping her quiet.
Like?
He'd growl.
What?
He'd growl. Like a dog.
That kept her quiet?
I imagine so, otherwise he wouldn't have kept on doing it. Those people Katie lives with, the Glazers, they don't care for me much, do they?
I wouldn't say that.
Then why won't they let me see Katie at their house? Why do you have to drive Katie all the way out here just so I can spend some time with her?
I think the Glazers, you know, I think they're concerned that you might not feel comfortable seeing Katie with, well, you know, foster parents. Louise, it's not that they don't like you. They're just trying to be considerate.
Uh-huh.
Ask me a question. Look, I don't care what it is, just ask me something.
Dark.
Yes, it is dark. It's late. Just ask me a question and we'll be all through.
Where, Kurt? Come Thursday.
So what you really want to ask me is,
Where will Kurt pick me up on Thursday, right?
Dark.
Sandra taps her fingers on a sofa.
All right, let's call it a day. Do you remember when I told you I had a friend I wanted you to meet? The one named Rob. Remember? Well, he's finally made it over. Come on. Get up.
She helps Katie up from the sofa and they go to the door. Sandra smiles as Rob enters and kisses her. She nods at Katie as he closes the door behind him.
Rob, this is Katie. Katie, this is Rob.
Hi, Katie.
She cocks her head and smiles at him. She grabs his hand and pulls him away.
Katie, where are you going?
They go into another room where Katie hands him a dress with a big smile.
That's very pretty, Katie.
She made it all by herself.
You did?
I sew a dress.
Beverly taught her how to operate a sewing machine.
Rob want graham cracker?
I think she's inviting you for a snack, but ask him again, and this time, put it in a question.
I wear is cracker.
He leans closer to her.
I'd be honored to share a graham cracker with you.
Later, Rob wakes up from his sleep and turns to find the bed next to him is empty. He frowns. Sandra is working frantically at a kitchen table when he walks up behind her.
What are you doing?
Go back to bed, Rob.
Can't that wait until morning?
Rob, please. Go back to bed.
He stares at her for a moment, glances away, then slowly walks away. Later, she's in Dr. Glazier's office, shaking her head.
She's leveled off. I don't think she's making any true progress at all. I mean, the vocabulary's there, you know, but it's not at the normal level that you'd find in the average child just entering kindergarten. And even with the words that she has learned, she can't construct a grammatical sentence in English.
Mm-hmm. Or anything beyond the rudimentary.
I like sewing. In Katie's case, it could just as easily be sewing like I. Even when she is being grammatical, it's not...
On purpose, yeah. Mm-hmm. I see your point.
You know, what really amazes me is how effective she is when she's not relying on speech. I mean, she always manages to find some way to make herself understood, Norm. And she's so good with her hands. Maybe we can find a way to combine the two.
Outside the Glazier home, a man and Katie face each other as he teaches her sign language.
Okay, let's try that again. Ready? I will see... Remember, you learned it like that. Two fingers. See the dentist tomorrow. Do it again. One more time. I will... Right. See... The dentist tomorrow. Very good. Very good. Hey, say something to Sandra. Anything you want to say.
Katie loves Sandra. Sandra loves Katie, too.
As the Glazier boy watches, a car pulls into the driveway. Eleanor Schultz and Dr. Tennyson from the National Institute of Mental Health get out of the car.
Mom?
They approach the house. Later, candles burn on a cabinet in a darkened room. Sandra shakes her head as Rob enters and sees her sitting in the darkness. He's carrying two paper sacks.
Hey, when'd you get home?
He turns on a light.
They've discontinued the grant.
He stares at her.
What?
The NIMH, they've dropped it. I kept telling Norm to organize his research better, and he kept telling me, oh, everything's fine.
So where does that leave Katie?
the Glazers have already made new arrangements. You believe this? They've already found new accommodations.
And new accommodations where?
Louise stands in a doorway.
I fixed up your room.
Katie stares at her as Norm shuts the door.
You want to go see it?
He nods at her.
Go ahead, Katie.
Dr. Glazier swallows hard as Katie takes her armload of buckets and looks around the kitchen table. Louise fluffs a pillow and places it on a bed. Katie quietly watches in the neat and tidy room. She takes a few steps forward and looks at a dollhouse sitting on a dresser. She puts the stack of buckets and pails on the bed. She pushes on the mattress that's still covered with plastic. Dr. Glazier frowns and leaves.
It's brand new. They just delivered it this morning.
Katie tries to look through the plastic. She runs to the front window in time to see Dr. Glazier driving away. Katie fights her tears as her mother walks up behind her.
He's gone already, huh?
Sandra arrives in front of Louise's home. She walks up just as Louise and another woman emerge from the house.
I think that once you actually see the institution, you'll agree that Katie couldn't find better care anywhere.
Well, hello there.
Hi.
Mrs. Duray, this is...
Duria.
Duria, this is Sandra Tannen. She's to work with Katie.
Actually, I think I'm going to have a chance to work with her again. It looks like the National Science Foundation is going to approve my grant proposal.
Really? Do you know Peter Chang? He's at the NSF.
No, it doesn't ring a bell.
She nods.
Well, I better run. Give me a call tomorrow, Louise, and we'll try to set up a meeting to get together and see the place.
Fine.
And it was nice meeting you.
She leaves.
Nice woman. I didn't quite get what she does.
Katie runs out and hugs Sandra.
Hi, Katie. Hey. How are you?
Katie starts signing to her.
Oh, yes, I know. You miss Beverly. I'm sure she misses you, too.
Sandra stares into Katie's eyes as she signs back to her. Later, she watches Katie draw with a pencil.
Well, that is just the best picture anybody has ever made of me.
Sandra picks it up for a closer look.
You know what? Why don't you make another picture of Rob? So I could take it home and show him what a great artist you are. Huh?
Katie picks up a crayon, thinks for a moment, then begins to draw. Soon after, Sandra approaches Louise in the kitchen. Louise has her back to Sandra as she washes dishes. She doesn't turn around.
Louise, I hope you aren't considering placing Katie in some sort of institution.
She pushes dishes away.
I can't see that I have much choice. She spits all over my nice clean floors. She stomps her feet and slams the doors. And she rubs her hands all over her private parts.
Louise leans against the sink, then turns around suddenly.
She never used to do such things.
Yeah, well, she wasn't able to.
Oh, I thought I could take care of her again. Katie's got a lot of problems. I didn't realize the kinds of problems she's got.
You know what I would do if I were in your place, Louise?
Louise rears her head back and raises her eyebrows.
I would call the Department of Social Services. I would ask them to place Katie in a foster home. You know, a nice couple whose kids have left home, or maybe the kids are old enough to help out.
Louise turns away and picks up a dish towel.
I would hate to see her end up in an institution, Louise. It is too cold an environment for someone like Katie. She needs love. She needs a family.
A crucifix hangs on a wooden beam. A frowning man, two girls, and Katie stand stiffly behind their chairs as a woman with her hair in a braided bun brings food to the table. The stern woman takes her place at one end of the table. The others follow suit, but only after she sits and puts her palms together. One of the girls has a hearing aid and the other has red hair.
Let's bow our heads in prayer.
The two older girls comply.
Katie, what did I just say?
Head prayer.
She reaches for bread, but the red-haired girl stops her.
Thank you, Colleen.
The woman motions to Katie to put her hands together in prayer. Colleen raises her eyebrows, and the man closes his eyes and lowers his head.
Heavenly Father, we thank thee for these blessings you have bestowed upon us. We pray that you guide our actions as we perform your work.
The girls look at each other. The man opens his eyes, tightens his lips, and begins passing food. Later outside, the woman and Colleen are pruning a vine as Katie and the girl with the hearing aid sign to each other. The man steps outside and glances at a flower on the vine. The girl and Katie smile, then sign to each other. The man frowns when he sees them.
Jill, you know you aren't supposed to use sign language.
You have something to say, just say it. We can't understand you when you talk with your hands.
That goes for you too, Katie.
Katie glances from the man to Jill at the butcher's.
So where's the girl?
She moved.
Doing well, I hope.
Yeah, she's doing really well. Really well, thanks.
Sandra smiles as she walks away. A stern woman frowns during breakfast. Katie's head is over her bowl.
Would you like me to cut up a banana to put on your cereal?
No banana.
Katie takes a bite of cereal.
Colleen, pass me the sugar.
Katie throws up into her bowl and everyone grimaces.
I'll take her to the bathroom.
Wait a minute. I'll get something to clean this up.
She leaves. Katie looks at the others, then resumes eating from the same bowl. Jill covers her mouth with her hand. The man stands and slaps Katie hard. Later.
And furthermore, I told her she could no longer have any visits from her mother.
Why? Because she looks forward to them. The only way to impress a child is to deprive it of something that it values.
Mrs. Manning, didn't the DSS tell you that this girl has an extremely unusual background?
We have two other foster children with equally unusual backgrounds. They don't go around eating their own vomit.
It's the act of an animal.
Mrs. Manning sighs. Colleen looks at Katie as she lies in bed. Katie has her back to her and the covers tucked under her arm.
Tell me more about Kurt, Katie. I want to hear more about Kurt.
Sandra slowly walks into the room. She smiles a little and sits on the bed.
Hi, Katie.
Katie turns.
Hi.
They hug.
Oh.
I heard about your accident. Want to tell me about it?
Katie pulls in her lips, frowns, and shakes her head.
You're keeping your mouth shut because you're afraid you'll vomit, right? Is that what you're doing? Well, why don't you use sign language? Hmm?
Mr. Manning doesn't want her to use sign language. Mr. Manning.
Look, Mr. Manning can go to hell.
Colleen cowers a little.
Colleen, don't tell Mr. Manning that I said that. I don't want him to take it out on Katie.
I promise.
Sandra turns to Katie.
Talk to me.
Katie covers her mouth.
Katie, please, talk to me.
She shakes her head and turns over in her bed. Later, Sandra paces as she talks on the phone. Rob's behind her.
If you would just see her for yourself, Norm, you would understand why I'm... But all I'm asking is for you to just take her back to Children's Hospital. This house is the worst placement you could possibly... We'll figure that out later. First, we've got to get her out of that house. I'm not exaggerating in the slightest. This is a real crisis. It's... Okay. 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 Thank you, Norm. Thank you.
He's going to help.
Sandra nods.
He's going to help.
Rob kisses her on the head. A blue sky with no clouds brings sunshine to the day. Sandra gets out of her car and approaches the Mannings' home. She walks to the front door and rings the bell. She paces until Mrs. Manning answers the door. She glares at Sandra as she steps outside.
Good morning, Miss Tannen. Morning.
Sandra tries to feed a resistant Katie.
Please, Katie. Katie, you've got to eat. Katie, you've got to eat. If you don't eat, you'll get sick. Katie, come on.
She shakes her head.
Open, open, open. You're okay. You're okay. Open. Good.
Katie finally takes a bite. Sandra holds the child close. Later at the Glaziers. Sandra's ringing the doorbell. She steps away, then turns back to the doorbell again. She grimaces and leaves. A woman is helping people as they approach a counter. Sandra cuts in line.
Can I help you?
Yes, yes. I would like to speak to the social worker who's handling the Standen case.
Standen?
Yeah, Katie Standen.
Soon after.
If you would just pay her a visit, I'm sure you would see that she's got to be relocated immediately. It's awful there. She won't eat. She won't speak.
Seems like she's the problem, not the foster parents.
Do you know even the slightest thing about her background? We are talking about a very unique child here.
They're all unique. You see all these files on my desk? There's a child that goes with each one of them. One's lost his parents in a fire, another's been molested since infancy.
And I empathize with each and every one of them. I do. But if you would just make an effort to familiarize yourself with the history of this particular child, I think you would see that she's in a class all her own.
Oh, so we're interested in class distinctions, are we?
Later, Sandra rubs Katie's back as she lies on her bed.
Katie. Katie, don't you want to see Rob? Huh? Oh, he's dying to see you.
Katie's been hurting herself. She does this all the time. At night, she lies there doing it till the blood comes out.
Katie, let me see. Katie, show me. Where?
Her arms are badly cut.
Oh. Oh. Oh.
Sandra closes her eyes. She glances at Colleen, who's rocking back and forth. Katie pulls back as Sandra tries to look at the other arm. Later, Norm answers his door in his pajamas and robe.
5 minutes. That's all I'm asking for. 5 minutes of your time.
He stares at her.
I know it was hard on you. I know you and Beverly had to sacrifice a great deal having Katie come and live here with you. Maybe you don't think that I can appreciate the extent of those sacrifices, but in my own limited way, I think I can.
He stares expressionless.
So I can understand why you don't want to get involved again. And I wouldn't be asking you if I could think of anything else to do. I mean, if I were Sandra Tannen, MD, PhD, LCSW, I could walk into that house and take her straight to the hospital. But I don't have all those letters by my name, Norm.
He takes a deep breath.
I'm not asking you to move her back in again. I just want you to help me stop her from destroying herself. I mean, if you could just see the extent of the damage. Please help her, Norm. I'm begging you. Nobody else will do it. Nobody else.
Later, Katie sleeps in a hospital bed. A hand touches her shoulder and she turns wide-eyed.
No, it's just me. It's just me. It's okay.
Katie's arms are bandaged. Katie slowly turns away as Sandra strokes her long brown hair. Later, Sandra walks out of Katie's hospital room and passes a nurse's station. She goes to a water fountain and gets a drink.
The second I heard she was living in an abusive home, I didn't even blink. I got right in my car, I went over there, and an hour later I checked her into the hospital.
Well, hooray for you.
Amanda, this is Sandra Tannen. Sandra, this is Amanda Black from the DSS. She's going to be taking over Katie's case.
Nice to meet you.
In an empty cafeteria.
I understand you were concerned about the other two girls living with the Mannings, and you'll be happy to know their cases are under
review. I'd be happier knowing that they were both out of
there. Well, these things take time, but it would be relatively easy to find new placements for those two. Katie, well, I'm sure you know that's a bit more problematic. We've got to make sure this situation doesn't
reoccur. Yeah, I'm all for that.
You know, I don't know how you'll take to this suggestion, but how would you like to have Katie come live with you?
With me?
From what I understand, you two have a good relationship. You've known each other a fairly long time. You obviously have a good understanding of Katie's needs. In fact, we'll probably never find anyone else who understands her nearly so well.
In bed with Rob.
It's just that.
She's very demanding. I know. I realize that.
It's not just her. It's us. It's you. How would you ever find time to finish school if you had to look after Katie?
You know, I've thought about all that. From every practical standpoint, this is the worst idea I've ever heard.
But you can't help thinking about it.
A sign reads Child Ward, Section A. Sandra walks in the hospital room, but another patient's there.
I'm sorry, I must have the wrong room.
Later, she's talking to an older nurse.
She was moved to another location.
You mean another hospital?
I honestly don't know.
What do you mean you don't know?
She was moved this morning to another location. That's all the information I have.
Who moved her? Somebody had to authorize it.
As a matter of fact, she was accompanied by her mother.
Louise answers the door.
She's not here.
Do you mind if I ask where she is?
In a place of my own choosing. And don't give me any of your nonsense about what's good for Katie. You don't know what's good for Katie. You never did.
Louise, please. I have driven all the way out here. Could I please, please just come in and speak to you for just a few minutes? Louise, please.
Louise stares at her indignantly. Later, she sits stiffly in a rocking chair with her hands laced together in her lap.
The way you hounded that child. Don't say it like this, Katie. Say it like that. And giving her all those tests, that's why she couldn't get along with the Mannings. You pushed her to a point where she didn't know what Jenna was up anymore.
Louise, that's not true. Katie loved the work that we did. I mean, there were days when even I didn't want to work, and she would make me do it.
That's the way you trained her. She was never a person to you. She was just some little scientific project.
Sandra shakes her head as her chin quivers.
No. No. I needed her in my life. From the first moment that I laid eyes on her.
Well, you won't be laying eyes on her anymore. If I find you anywhere near Katie, I'm going to call my lawyer. And that goes for the Glazers and Dr. York and anybody else from Children's Hospital. She is my daughter. I'll decide what's done with her.
Tears flow from Sandra's eyes.
She's going to think that I abandoned her. You know? Could I please say goodbye?
No goodbyes. No, nothing. Just go.
go back where you came from and stay there.
Louise's chin trembles. Sandra picks up her purse and stands. She looks at Louise for a moment as she walks to the door.
Louise, there's something I've wanted to ask you from the very beginning, but I never felt that I should. Why? Why did your husband isolate Katie?
I can't tell you that.
You can't, or you won't.
How can I tell you something I don't understand myself? Nobody understood Wes. Except maybe his mother.
Louise stares downward and remembers.
This was her house. When Katie was a baby, we would spend about as much time here as we would at our place. She was like somebody out of the Old West. Used to run a house of ill repute. Even in her old age, she still packed a pistol. Oh, Wes, he was just wild about her. I think he cared more about her than he ever did me.
She sounds like quite a character.
Oh, she was. Wes was never the same after she died. It happened right outside this door. She was walking out to get an ice cream when this car comes running right up on her.
Louise pounds her fist in her hand.
Killed instantly, just like that. And I swear she wasn't in the ground more than a week. Then Wes moved us all in here. Her bedroom, Wes wanted to keep it just the way it was when she was alive. So we all had to sleep in the living room.
Wes looks at a framed photograph of his mother. The woman's not smiling and her hair is pulled back from her face into a bun.
For everybody but Katie. She had the room in the back.
Katie, as a baby, pulls on newspapers in the bottom of the playpen.
It was almost like Wes was giving her something special.
It sounds like he projected his feelings for his mother onto Katie.
I beg your pardon.
I didn't mean to. Go on.
Well, one day I took Katie to the doctor. She was sick a lot from the day she was born. And this doctor said it looked to him like she was retarded. Well, that was it as far as Wes was concerned. He said if those doctors get a hold of her, we'd never get her back.
He puts chicken wire over the playpen.
He said she probably wouldn't live to the age of 3 anyway.
Katie, as a toddler, is strapped to the chair.
But she just kept getting older. And I was already starting to go blind, so Wes, he was the one taking care of her.
His gun is tucked into his pants.
I knew she needed help. But Wes, he was always walking around with that pistol his mother left him.
With a gun in his hand, Wes puts the framed picture of his mother on the small kitchen table.
The one he used to kill himself with.
He stands on the plastic sheet and brings the gun up to his head.
It happened right here in this room. Sometimes in the middle of the night, I'll hear the floor settle, and I could swear it was Wes walking around with that pistol in his belt.
He was trying to protect her, like she was a princess locked away in a tower.
Wes never did trust doctors, and in that regard, I've come around to his way of thinking.
She stares firmly at Sandra, then glances down and swallows. Soon after, Louise walks out with Sandra. Sandra tucks her long dark hair behind her ear as she sadly walks back to her car. A car pulls up behind Sandra. It's Judy.
Hello, Miss Tannen.
Judy waves at Louise.
So how long has this been going on?
From the moment that I read that article of yours, I thought Katie's mother should know the kind of people she's dealing with. But believe me, I didn't have to say much. My objections found very sympathetic ears.
There was nothing wrong with that article. You were just looking for an excuse. You didn't care what it was, just as long as it helped you get Katie back.
And thanks to you, I never will. Poisoning the DSS against me? Well, who's sorry now? Hello.
Judy and Louise go into the house. Sandra sobs. Later, she watches tapes of Katie beating a pillow at Beverly's house and holding up a card that reads, Went. Sandra closes her eyes, then swallows.
Even after all this time, I continue to hope that somehow, some way, I'll get to see Katie again. When I think about that possibility, which is every single day, I always wonder what I'd say to her. I know I'd apologize for leaving the way I did. It wasn't by choice, but I'd apologize just the same, just so she'd know it wasn't her fault. And then I'd ask all about her life. I'd ask who she sees, what she does, and whether or not she's happy. And obviously, I hope she'd tell me yes. Even if she did, I'd still wish there was some way I could give her back all the things she lost. But I know that isn't possible. All I can do is concentrate on those things that are under my control. And that goes for each and every one of us.
Rob hands a newborn baby to Sandra, who cradles the child.
Hush, little baby, don't say a word. Mama's gonna buy you a mockingbird. And if that mockingbird don't sing, Mama's gonna buy you a diamond ring. And if that diamond ring turns brass...
The screen reads, Judy Bingham continued to harass members of the Katie team until her death in 1988.
If that looking glass gets broke, Mama's gonna buy you a billy goat.
Louise, once again blind, presently resides in a Southern California nursing home.
Mama's gonna buy you a cart and bowl.
Sandra Tannen is now a professor of linguistics at UCLA and the mother of two teenaged daughters.
Mama's gonna buy you a dog named
She is still forbidden to have any contact with Katie, who lives in a nearby foster home. Katie's inability to master a language proved the legitimacy of the critical period hypothesis.
And if that horse and cart fall down, you'll still... be the sweetest little baby in